Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show, coming at you as always on a Monday morning. As always, joined by Andrew Combo, Salah, to discuss the latest and the greatest in the NBA. We've got the playoffs coming. This is exciting stuff. Play-in tournament starts tomorrow. We got MVP discussion to get through. Lots of stuff to talk about. Don't forget, if you want your question answered, the best way to do that would be on the Super Chat over on the YouTube side. But either way, Combo, talk to me.
I'm here talking, man. That's what I'm here to do, Coach Nick. You know what I was thinking about? The first thing that came to mind when it comes to the Western Conference side of things, like if the Warriors and Lakers get in, this could be the most fun first round we've ever seen in terms of like star power and how close some of these series could be.
I mean, you can limit that just to the play-in, and you've got some interesting stuff. Although right. Lakers, give them credit, they squeaked into the eighth spot, and they're not in the play-in anymore. We had a chance to have the Suns, Lakers, and Warriors in that play-in, which would have been insane. But as it is, we've got – oh, I'm sorry. We do have the Lakers in the play-in. Forgive me. I forgot. So we had the Lakers and the Warriors. The Suns didn't give us the benefit of that last little, Durant and Booker and Beal in there. But – even still, just limiting it to the play-in is exciting on that end. Here's another interesting thing. Like the Bulls, let's see here. The Pelicans won 49 games and have to play a play-in, right? The Knicks won 50 games and they're in second spot in the Eastern Conference. I mean, what does that tell you?
Yeah, it's crazy. Also, look at 4, 5, and 3, 6. Think about how many Hall of Famers, superstars are... stars are in these games. You got Paul George, Kawhi, you got Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Kyrie, Luka Doncic, Anthony Edwards, Kat, Booker, Durant, I mean, Bradley Beal. Just in those two series, it's kind of crazy if you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so you're right. We should have some really epic stuff. And as you know, or you may not know, if you're newer to B-Ball Breakdown, I tend to do like one video a day doing game breakdowns of all the games. So I got a problem. I'm supposed to be training tomorrow from 6 to 7. And I don't even know. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. I mean, I don't want to leave my kids hanging, but I can't miss a chunk like that in the middle of the play-in games, can I?
I guess a little rewind button. What do you got, DVR? What do you got going on?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could just, listen, the most I'd miss would be like a half, right? And I can run right back in. So we'll have to play that by ear and see if everyone's available. But it's going to be epic, man. So starting tomorrow, I had the bracket up. I don't have the damn schedule. So we'll see. Let's go through some of these things real quick. So let's start at the bottom of the West. We can kind of go through. I thought it'd be interesting to do a little bit of it doesn't have to be in depth, but just kind of a quick overview of who we think are going to win these series. We got the Kings and the Warriors. Thoughts in the 9-10 play-in?
Yeah, I mean, the Kings are somewhat decimated because the absence of Malik Monk. I mean, he's their sixth man, but he's also their third best player. And without him, they've been really struggling. So I don't really see them beating the Warriors in this one.
I hear you. They've really been limping the last, 10 games. They're only 4-6. And the defense hasn't been great at all in a way that if you're going to go against a team like the Warriors, it's going to be a bad equation for you. So and by the way, the Warriors have really turned it on in the last, quarter of the season. So they probably have unlocked some things. They found some things in Kuminga that can really add as a second scorer with the off the dribble, which really helps them. I think the key for the Warriors, I would have to say, would be Wiggins needs to play better. He needs to find his title Wiggins, inner Wiggins. They need to get better play out of him. I would like to see Klay tends to still be way all over the place. And I don't know if I would want to rely on him much more than, 20 some minutes a game. Because of that. So I think that's an issue. I think people want to have, I should check it actually when we're looking real quick. People are upset with the three guard lineups that Kerr is throwing out there with CP3. But I agree. I think that they're going to be able to beat the Kings in that first play-in.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors have been playing better second half of the season. Andrew Wiggins is looking more like Andrew Wiggins, which is always great. Klay Thompson has been better. So I think, you know, as long as Draymond could not go crazy, I think that's always the X factor. But I think they'll be okay against the Kings.
Okay, so we're both on the same page here with the Warriors and the Kings. Let's go over to the Pelicans-Lakers. Mm-hmm. Intriguing. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers get it done. And when it comes to all these play-in teams, I think they have the best chance to actually win the title. Are they my favorite? No, but I just think that they're built for the playoffs in a lot of different ways. And obviously, when you have AD and LeBron, you never count them out. And then there's been an emergence of Rui Hachimura. Their X factor, to me, is going to always be D. Russell and the way he plays. So, you know, with AD and Braun, and then you got Austin Rivers and D'Lo, who could have big games themselves, I just see them being too much for Zion and the Pels.
Yeah, I mean, I went through the game. I watched like the first half of the game yesterday, which, you know, had enough implications where they were playing, and it was really up and down. It was exciting. LeBron had, I want to say, 8 assists in the first quarter, and he could have had 10 with Reeves missing an open three, and then AD missed a dunk on a lob to him. So, excuse me. So, you know, it seems like the Lakers might have the Pelicans' number. They had Ingram in the lineup. They didn't look good, and the Lakers defense looked really good against a team that could shoot the ball really well. So I don't know what to make of the Lakers, right? I mean, you know, can you never supposed to count out LeBron and AD, and I always do, and I to my detriment. So I'm confused about them, but I think long-term, I don't know if they're making a long run in the playoffs, but they certainly should be able to win that first game and get into the next round, into the first round.
How do you feel about them playing the Nuggets in the first round if they do get by the play-in? Because some would say that a fully charged LeBron or a more charged LeBron might be more dangerous for the Nuggets than maybe seeing him later on in the playoffs when he's a little bit more tired since he is an older guy.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that too much. I just don't think the Lakers have enough to offer against the Nuggets either way.
Yeah, yeah.
From
a team perspective, they're better, and they probably have the best player on the floor as well when it comes with the Nuggets.
Yeah, and yeah. I would see Jamal Murray probably doing some damage. And so I don't know if they have any other way to combat that. And then they're just so solid, and the Lakers aren't as solid down the stretch and with that. So barring any kind of unforeseen, you know, injury or whatever, I wouldn't be able to pick the Nuggets over or the Lakers with the Nuggets. We have our first super chat. Let's get to that real quick. So we have Fiery. Thanks, Fiery. Fiery looks like he's a Green Bay Packers fan. Okay. Brunson or Giannis for first team all NBA. This has been a bit of a discussion, I think, on Twitter yesterday. So what do you think?
Great question. So it's obviously SGA, Luka, Jokic, and then why not Brunson and Giannis?
Right. And then Luka, right?
Yeah. That's the five. So what's the question? I think that they're both in with Luka and Jokic and SGA. I think that's the five.
Oh, we're missing somebody.
Yeah. I mean, some would say Tatum. I think I got Brunson over Tatum.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. Because I think Simmons was on the thing saying Tatum should go in over Brunson.
Brunson has done more with less. And then also on top of it, recency bias, like during their recent matchup, he just took over against the Celtics in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I know that's only a small part of it, but I think things like that matter. And I think he's just having a better season than Tatum. I think Tatum has a lot more around him than Brunson does, right?
Yeah. I mean, the argument was Tatum had to, you know, sacrifice some of his numbers for that. And that's fine. But it doesn't take away from what Brunson did. And he did it in a more profound way, at least in both, I would say, the box score and the effect and the impact he had on the game. You know, and it's not Tatum's fault that his team might be better all around or is better all around. But the bottom line is the work that Brunson put in, I just don't know why you'd put anybody over him for that first team.
Yeah. Yeah, just phenomenal. I mean, some would have him in the MVP conversation.
Oh, I would, for sure. I mean, did anybody see the video I just did of him? I mean, it was really cool, some interesting stuff that we discovered. So, you know, he's turning these drives into post-ups, which we have been talking about for a long time, and I finally got to the video of it where I went on the spotlight. In fact, I was going to make it like he's the best post-up player in the NBA, but then I realized that a lot of the videos I do when I have multiple players in don't do so well for whatever reason. People like to be focused on one. So I just did on that. But like, that's the kind of revolutionizing of the game that we haven't really seen much. So we always talk about him playing off of two feet, which is also extremely important. But I think what people are responding to, and they don't necessarily realize, is that it's he's playing off of two because he's turning these drives into post-ups.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he's probably the third or fourth best post player in the NBA. I mean, I think you got to go with Embiid and Jokic, and then Luka's up there as well. Kyrie's actually underrated in that regard, really good in the post. And then,
by the way, you know who's also really good in the post? Who? SGA.
He is.
We'll get to him in a minute. But here's the thing. I suppose if you're going to try and choose the best post player, you have to factor in passing. And right, I mean, I don't see how else. I mean, you're splitting hairs at this point when they're that good with, on the scoring level. So we probably have to factor that in, I guess.
It got to be Jokic, right?
So yeah, that's the case. It's Jokic or Luka is like that as well. You know, some of these guys can make like the basic easy pass or the open shot and whatever, but it's sometimes it's the way they can see the floor. And it's kind of too bad that, you know, LeBron isn't in this conversation. You know, I it must just be sort of a volume thing. I can check real quick on the synergy to see
what he does more bully ball from the perimeter than just kind of turning his back into a post, right?
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
All of that makes sense. And then all of that, you know, as his game evolved, listen, you can't take it. He had the most impressive stats of any 39-year-old of all time by like an order of magnitude. So there's nothing to take away from him. I just thought that it would be nice to sort of see him, you know, make that more of a focal point. In fact, according to Synergy, he's averaged his frequency for post-ups is 10.7%, which is pretty good. I think it's probably higher than it's been in a long time. The efficiency isn't out of this world, but you know, that's the thing. I would have loved at some point to have seen that develop into more of a game, to get back to more of those. I loved it when he would throw those crazy skip passes across the court to corner threes from the post.
Oh yeah.
And I just feel like we're not getting that as much for whatever reason. And, you know, it's probably hard. It's hard to do when you're getting up there, and I don't blame him, but, all right. So I think we're definitely on the team Brunson side for that. I mean, but by the way, Giannis probably is in there as well. So I think it's the Tatum discussion. I think that you have to split hairs there. But is there anybody else we're missing for that or no?
Nah. I think that's the six.
Okay.
All right. Tatum's right out. Anthony Edwards in the mix.
Yeah, for first team. Yeah, I mean, listen, at some point he's going to win everything all the time. And it's like, you know, I guess if you want to let him wait one more year, it's okay with me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also think Wemby's coming as well. So we'll see who's going to win everything all the time soon.
Right. It's going to change. And, you know, Ant is going to be our American hope, I guess, and maybe Tatum as well. Otherwise, it's just going to be from everywhere else in the world. And there's going to be another Wemby, I'm sure. And then, you know, we'll see how that goes. We need another American who can break into the top five of the NBA players. It's kind of crazy that it's not that way anymore.
Oh, well, you're saying Brunson right now. Top five.
I am. You know what? I am saying that. Brunson out of the blue, he does do that. So I guess we'll put him in there. Fine. Okay. Good to know. Now, Brunson isn't really a serious MVP candidate, unfortunately. I think he should be, but we don't even know what MVP is supposed to award anyway. So I don't.
That's always the big.
Yeah. Let's put that in here before it gets too late in the game here from Ken C. Thank you, Ken. Really appreciate that. Will Hallie make all NBA? Personally think he shouldn't. So there's three teams. You know, I don't listen. He was leading the you know, one of the best offenses of all time. You know,
we got to count first half as well. So it hasn't been as crazy as the first half since the injury.
Yeah,
but I mean, he was great during that time period. So
I
think 13 makes sense. But if we really wanted to answer this for you, Ken, we probably have to have a whole episode and go through every player, right?
That's true. I'm checking. I want to see how many games he ended up playing. He ended up playing 69. So, you know, that's enough as well. I do feel bad that the injury did seem to take some of the wind out of the sails. They finished second in the league in offensive rating. So that was good. And by the way, would we have been, let's see, surprised at the beginning of the year if I told you that they get the sixth spot in the East? Is that a surprise, 47-35 record?
No. I mean, it sounds about right. Right? Who would you think they'd be better? Would you think they'd be worse before the season?
I mean, they were probably kind of forgotten. So we can kind of say now, that makes kind of sense that they'd be, you know, pretty good middle of the pack Eastern Conference. But I'm trying to sort of dig my brain through or go through my brain if we remember like how we would have felt Carlisle there. I don't know, it's not like a, obviously six isn't the crazy high thing. It's not like if they were third, then we'd be like, wow, like look what Halliburton did and lifted them. So that's not the crazy thing. So, all right, I guess we can just sort of settle into like they performed well. He did well. And we'll have to sort of see how the playoffs go. I know that doesn't affect the all NBA stuff, but I don't think so. Certainly I'm curious to see how Halliburton does and whether he can kind of lift them and make them extra special competitive as the underdog.
Yeah, I mean, look, they got Siakam now. That helps a lot. Mm-hmm. He's another great player that his game is kind of tailor-made for the playoffs in a lot of ways because that team doesn't really have a guy who could get in the mid-range, yeah, get his shot off, get in the rim with the shot clock going down, end the game situation. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be fun in the playoffs.
Let's see here. The X-Factor, Obi Toppin.
I think he might be. Yeah, that's fair.
I think he could be. I think he's, you know, he's figuring.
I think the X factor for their team over the course of time is Ben Mathurin, though.
Did he come back? He was hurt.
I think he's hurt. Yeah, I think he's hurt.
Yeah, so he's not around. So that's another issue. So that's too bad, too, because he's a great scorer for them. So, all right, let's go to the East real quick and talk a little bit about that before we can move on to the rest of the stuff. 9-10, Bulls, Hawks. Does anybody want to watch this, this game, the play-in?
I was thinking the same thing, man. I mean, unfortunately, they got some really nice players like Trae Young and Coby White is my most improved player, but I don't think there's as much interest in this series as some of the other ones. Probably the least interesting series. These teams are like in purgatory, right? Like they're kind of in the middle between rebuilding and like trying to win because they're not even close to being in title contention.
Right. And it was interesting is that the Bulls were locked into the ninth spot, but they really put on a show and really played hard against the Knicks yesterday and got into overtime, which was interesting to me. I mean, listen, they're professionals and DeMar DeRozan is going to play and, you know, play as well as he can. Had the chance to win the game on a little midi that he hits in his sleep. So they're intriguing to me to some degree. But again, yeah, I don't think I mean, this is sort of you're right, exactly what you said. They're sort of stuck in that mid-tier, not going to be able to play and beat anybody above them. So I guess who are you going to pick though in this series?
I'll go with Trae Young.
Really?
I'm gonna go with the Hawks. Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Bulls a little slightly higher.
I kind of like Trae's mentality in playing playoff situations. I feel like
that is true. Anything can happen that one game. So
yeah, I feel like he has that killer instinct. I feel like he's like that, the closest thing to a superstar in that series, even though DeMar DeRozan is still really good. I'm going to go with Trae.
Yeah, DeMar DeRozan's got the killer instinct too, so you got to be aware of that. So I'm going with the Bulls.
I'm going with threes over tough twos, though.
Threes over tough twos? You know, okay, we'll find out how the defense is working if they run them off that line a little bit too much, and they're left with those middies. We got the Sixers and the Heat.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
If you are a Knicks fan, who would you rather play against if you were a Knicks fan?
Oh, right. Because they talked about that, right? Should they have tanked and try to, you know, not have to play the
Sixers? I mean, they definitely didn't tank, but the Cavs did last night. And that's a whole other topic for another day. But
Or we could throw it in there maybe. But
So who do you think's the better matchup for the Knicks? Because I definitely have my ideas on this.
I mean, obviously with the Knicks, better matchup between the Sixers or the Heat?
Yeah. Who would you rather play if you're on the Knicks?
I don't think you want to play the Sixers at all.
Really? I'm going the other way.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. They've been struggling. I mean, listen, they struggled. It's hard because they didn't have Embiid, and we saw what they had without that. And then obviously the Knicks would beat them easily. But you throw someone like Embiid who's going to also – oh, by the way, he's the guy we're not counting in the top five.
I mean, I guess he's out of it because of availability, right?
Yes, but going forward, like next year and all that stuff, right, Embiid is the guy who is
– I mean, he was on an MVP route before his injury.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So that's why Brunson doesn't make it or somebody doesn't make it because of Embiid with these healthy plays, the minimum games. So either way, I would just not want to have to deal with, Hartenstein, Mitchell Robinson, they have some people they can throw at an Embiid.
And Embiid might not be 100% right now.
Yeah, and right. Oh, that's right. And he also got banged up. So that's the other question is if he doesn't play and he's not 100 or 90%, then it's also moot, then fine. Then the Knicks can beat him. But that's always the big issue is if Embiid is healthy, I think he'd probably still want to, you know, you have to worry about playoff Jimmy, right? That's always
thing. That's what I'm saying. Like playoff Jimmy is just as good as Joel Embiid.
That's a good, I mean, I guess I can't argue with that one. You know,
playoff Jimmy is like damn near the best player in the NBA.
Right. And then you have to deal with the kind of defensive intensity that the Heat will bring that you won't see against the Sixers.
Also, like the Heat maximize talent, and I feel like they have even more talent than last year with Tyler Hero coming back recently and giving them scoring punch, hopefully off the bench, because I feel like that's his best role.
I'm interested. That's interesting. Yes. And then you got to deal with like Spoelstra versus Nurse, who you want to deal with on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going Spo over anybody, right?
Yeah. All right. I think you want to talk me into that. I can follow that line of reasoning for sure. So here we are. And so wait, so what do we end up saying? Between Sixers and Heat, who's going to win that series? Who would win that game?
Oh, I'm going Heat.
You're going to pick the Heat. I don't know. I'll probably have to go Heat too. I feel like because we know the Embiid's probably not going to be anywhere near 90%. So let's go with Heat.
And quick aside, when would that game be? If they either one of those teams, when do they play the Knicks? What's the date on that? This weekend?
Oh,
or earlier.
Yeah, let's see. They're playing tomorrow. Wait, where did they go? I lost my schedule. Let me get my schedule up here. So let's see.
Oh, I guess the 20th.
They play. On Wednesday, Miami plays Philly. And then the winner would have to play. Let's see here. Where does the Knicks come in? I don't see the Knicks on the first couple of days, interestingly enough. Okay. So what I see on Saturday is Orlando. Oh, I'm sorry. There it is. I can't read. Saturday would be the first game.
Okay.
So we have some time to figure that one out. But all right, let's get to another super chat we have here from Alan Tran, friend of the Breakdown. It's nice to see you, Alan. Thank you so much for so your generosity. It's really appreciated. There is a reality where both Minnesota and OKC can lose in the first round. I wouldn't be shocked if Golden State and Phoenix move on. The West is insanely competitive. Wow, he's dropping the mic on that one. Reaction. Minnesota.
I'd like to see OKC win, but I mean, I think there's definitely a world where the Warriors could beat them. If the Kings somehow make it out, which I don't think they will, I don't see a way that the Kings could beat OKC in a series.
Well, okay.
So, yeah. So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, there is a world. Like Alan's right. Like there's so many things that could happen here in this Western Conference because so many of these teams are so talented, so much depth, so good that you never really know what could happen. And then obviously with the star power of the trio with the Suns, I mean, they definitely could beat Minnesota.
Minnesota, I've just been not sold on them for the whole time as a team. I still can't understand. By the way, Rudy had a couple moves. I was like, whoa, he caught it clean and he did a little step through and laid it in. I was amazed. I just get so nervous and worried. Well,
he's a future Hall of Famer, right?
What?
He's a future Hall of Famer, right?
Rudy Gobert. Yeah. I guess you have to factor in everything, right? International play, all that stuff. Okay. But like
the defensive awards. Yeah, definitely.
Defensive awards. His hands aren't great. You know, he actually had an interesting quote about defense, which I thought was interesting about how sometimes he doesn't always go for every block because of fouls and stuff, which does make sense. But I also, there are times when I scratch my head and say, like, he didn't even.
I see where he's going with that already.
What?
I see where he's going with that already.
Where am I going?
No, Rudy. I see what Rudy's doing.
I
see what Rudy's doing.
Yeah. And he has
read things really quick. Wemby has more blocks than him. So he's going to go on a media run and say, I don't go for every block. I see. But with that said, Rudy is the defensive player of the year, as much as I like the way Wemby plays defense, because I don't think a team record. And look, when we're talking MVP, like I think team record almost goes too much into it. Right. But when we're talking about defensive player of the year, you can't be one of the worst teams in the league and have the defensive anchor as defensive player of the year, no matter how spectacular he is, in my opinion.
I mean, the Spurs are a mess, so it's like, it's hard to, you know, that's what we're talking about, but
that's fair. That's fair though.
You know, it's just hard.
But I see what Rudy's doing.
Wemby will win the defensive player of the year award.
Oh my God. A whole bunch of them.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it won't be fair.
And he'll win MVPs if he stays healthy. Like, I think it's almost like, I think there's no way he doesn't win MVPs in his career.
Yeah. He'll have finals MVPs. He'll be the greatest of all time. I'm
really,
I'll drop it right here. I just don't see how, unless he gets hurt, like there's just no way. There's no, like, what he can do at that size is beyond anybody's, you know, anybody that's ever done. And because of that size, he should also, in the box score, you know, fill it up in a way that we haven't seen.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think all the things we're hearing from a mentality standpoint, which, like, when we look at the three greatest players ever, right? Let's say it's Kareem, Jordan, and LeBron, like, they had a different kind of mentality. And everything you hear about Wemby is that he's super mature for his age, puts the phone away early, reads his book, goes to sleep early. And I remember just watching him in summer league going through all this activation, looked like the most prepared guy there. You know, I think from a mentality standpoint, he could definitely become the GOAT one day.
Yeah, but he's on FaceGram combo.
What's that?
You didn't hear Tibbs, Tibbs saying that he really thinks Brunson's the best because he's not on FaceGram or whatever you call it.
Instagram?
Yeah. But he just said call it FaceGram. You didn't see? You got to go look it up. You'll see.
So Wemby is on Instagram, huh?
He is. That's why. Well, so Tibbs would say, oh, he can't be up there because he's on Instagram, which is the dumbest thing I've heard. But
Brunson's not on Instagram?
Apparently he's not, but he's on everything else. He's on podcasts. He's on everything. It doesn't matter. You know, he's doing all
that podcast is decent. I was watching a little
bit. Oh, they're hilarious. I got to tell you, I love Josh Hart and I love Brunson, and they clearly were having a fun time doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so cool just to, like, be able to play for your dad in New York and have two of your college teammates playing with you as well, entering into the playoffs. Like, it's just so cool. Right.
Yeah. It's too bad about Archie Diacono, because otherwise it would have been even more of that group. Yeah. But he was there. But then they traded him. Where did he go? I think I don't remember what it was. They traded him. He's not on that team anymore. Nonetheless. All right. But let's finish the thought that Alan has, which is about the Warriors and the Thunder. We didn't quite talk about that too much. But yes, the Warriors could beat the Thunder in a playoff series, right? They have all the experience. They have a lot of pieces. It's kind of weird. So it's been a weird season, right? The Draymond stuff happens again. Curry went on to a kind of a cold stretch for a while as well. But you have to imagine that, you know, there's a rejuvenation and a refocus, and they can find themselves again. But again, if Clay can't get better and Wiggins can't get better, then yeah, they can get beaten five or six games.
I mean, Wiggins has been better and Clay has been better. So,
it's just up and down. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, for sure they've solved all that. It's going to be good.
Wiggins almost disappeared for the rest of the year and then he came back real quick. So I guess that's good that he's even there.
Yeah. But they're going to need more. But they have all these interesting pieces that have come together now for them. So I'm fascinated. It'd definitely be the thing I'm keeping my eye on. So they could definitely do it. Alan's right. It wouldn't be shocking for either the Suns or the Warriors to win if they get that far in that first round. So it's just insane. In the West, you know, whenever we think the West couldn't get any better, you know, like I said in the first minute, the Knicks with 50 wins are second in the East, and with 49 wins, who's got 49 wins? The Pelicans with 49 wins are having to do a play-in. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. The NBA is crazy.
All right. Let's get to, so we covered those four in the beginning. We have a couple more, locked in stuff. So we talked about the Suns and the Timberwolves a little bit. Clippers, Mavericks, what do you think? Who's going to win that one?
I kind of want to see the Mavericks win. Oh man, that's a tough one. This is the toughest one, and it's probably the most interesting series. Oh man, that's tough. I'm going to go with Clippers, even though I want to see the Mavericks win. I'd say Clippers in seven.
I'm just worried about health. I feel like in my mind's eye, Kawhi is banged up, right?
Okay, then yeah. I mean, if it's not 100% Kawhi, I guess I'm not going. I'm not being strong in my opinion, right? I gotta pick one.
Right.
But I'm gonna go Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like at their best with the defense, they can do some stuff and they can probably let, you know, I mean, listen, Luka is going to have a huge series no matter what happens. You simply can't shut that down. But it's the other guys. But that said, Dallas has done some really terrific stuff with those those trades they made to bring in PJ Washington.
All right, you convinced me. I'm going Mavs. That's my official decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of feel like the Clippers season's been a little bit disjointed. They've got some, it sounds like they might have some issues behind the scenes. We saw Kawhi hasn't played. I forgot. Like he hadn't been playing for a while. I don't know if he's even going to be available. So, even if he is, he's probably not 100%. So that's going to, you're going to have to choose the Mavericks, even though they don't have home court advantage, but I'm going to pick that. But again, it's a kind of a toss up, probably be at least six games. Let's move on to the Eastern Conference then. We have Cavaliers and Magic. Orlando's an intriguing team. I can't quite figure them out. We get to see Paolo in the playoffs, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's going to be really fun. I mean, Franz and Paolo, their dynamic duo. Jalen Suggs been shooting the three better. Overall, I don't think they have a high ceiling in the playoffs because, first, they're so young. Second of all, their shooting's not good enough. But defensively, this team has been really interesting. Jamal Mosley has done a great job with this ball club. But, you know, I don't know if basketball karma might come back to haunt the Cavs, but I would say that the Cavs will win this one. Donovan Mitchell will be too much, and they'll win this series. But I really like what Orlando has been doing.
I mean, I'm not sold on the Cavs. We don't know about Donovan Mitchell either. He's been in and out of the lineup as well. And I don't know if he'll be 100%.
So you got the Magic.
What's that?
You got the Magic?
I think I'm going to go with the Magic. I mean, I know it's a tough one. It's a fifth seed, not having home court advantage, and they don't have a lot of playoff experience. But I don't know. I don't know why. I'm not always – whenever I watch the Cavs, I'm just feeling empty a little bit. I don't know if I'm just sort of convinced. That said, is it enough that they can get in the second round? Like, probably, but I don't know. I might be a little contrarian here and go with the and pick the okay. Magic and give them – right.
So I think this is our first disagreement. I convinced you that the Heat would be more dangerous than the Sixers. You convinced me that the Mavs will beat the Clippers. So we're even on the page on those two things. But I guess this is our first disagreement.
Okay. Let that be our first one. There could be more. Let's find out. Okay. Bucks, Pacers. What are we doing? Like, I guess they're talking about Giannis being able to have a miraculous comeback from that calf injury. But what? I don't know. I mean, I guess they'll have, if it's not the first game, I imagine he'll be back in that series. And we've seen them win series when he hasn't, you know, he missed a game or two. This is a very different Bucks team, very different coach at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I got the Bucks here. I think Giannis will be back. I think they just wanted to have some precaution here with Giannis shutting him down.
It was concerning, games. Though, right? That looked like an Achilles.
Yeah, but it wasn't. If it was, he would be shut down if it wasn't Achilles. They're not playing with that. But, yeah, I would have the Bucks. I just believe in that duo over anything that the Pacers have. And then, I mean, I feel like Indiana defensively really has nothing for Giannis in transition. Like, they have nothing for a lot of teams in transition. And when Giannis gets downhill, there's nothing that team could do.
That's probably the best point you made. Is that you know, you need to have that one defender that can at least, you know, slow him down so that the second defender can have a little hope of stopping him. I don't know if they have anybody like that. Probably not. So you know, that the one thing you can, you know, surmise is it's possible that like Indiana can get hot, you know, and start bombing threes. Let me just check. I'm kind of curious.
They will get hot, but I think it'll be five or six.
The shot dashboard for I want to check the Bucks. So the Bucks were the fourth highest 3-point frequency, and it looks like they shot really well. And they were on, say, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10th in 3-point percentage. So that'll be good. So what that tells me generally is that even if the Pacers get on a run and they hit a lot of threes, the Bucks can also hit threes on their own and balance that out a little bit. Because
that guy Dame Lillard, right?
Yeah, they have Dame. You know, Dame is streaky, but yeah, he can get hot. But remember, you know, if you get outscored from the 3-point line by like, you know, four in a game, that really reduces your opportunities to win, your chances to win. So that's what you got to be worried about. That's why, like, even the Thunder, they don't shoot hardly any threes, but they shoot them at a really high clip, but they just don't shoot a lot of them. And we'll get to that as we wrap up the show, I think, about SGA. I'm doing a really deep dive. I think I want to get it out today. So hopefully you guys are all around. I can get it done. We'll see with all my rest of my schedule. But we have some more Super Chats. Let's get to another one from Alan Tran. Thank you, best friend of the breakdown. Alan, I really, really appreciate this. Hey, coach, off topic and quick question, but as a shooting coach, can you fix Moses Brown's free throws? Haven't seen anything this ugly since Chuck Hayes. Right. That is true. Chuck Hayes is uglier without question. Have you seen Moses Brown's free throws?
No, but I definitely see Chuck Hayes.
So now, you know, full disclosure, I've known Moses since he was in high school. Okay. And my buddy Tommy, who's, you know, one of the finest trainer I've ever been around, was his trainer. And his free throws looked a lot better when Tommy was working with him. And it's been a while. And so it's kind of reverted. And whoever's trying to help him has really done a disservice to him. But I know that Moses can shoot better. I've seen the rhythm a lot better and smoother. And then the results be a lot better. So without question, yes, you can fix that. But it would require to be out of the box. and with an approach that isn't like minimalist where you're trying to eliminate stuff, because that's just what happens. You're trying to eliminate extra motion. I think it's a terrible idea for almost everybody to do that. And that's, this is what you get when out of this, some sort of robotic looking like a catapult to the rim. It's scary.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
All right. Let's get to the Drew Show. Thank you, the Drew Show. We haven't seen a little bit, but great to have you back here. Thank you. Always there for us for the Super Chats. Really, really appreciate it. You say, I know who is not MVP, not Embiid. Okay. Not LeBron, not KG.
I think he means KD.
KD, right. Because I was like, is there a new KG that I don't know about? No. Not Giannis, not AD, not Curry, not any Clipper. So, Joker, Luka, SGA, Edwards. I say Joker.
I think I'm with the Drew Show here. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, for the longest time the SGA thing is interesting, right? And is that sort of a, you know, again, the only thing that kind of shoved them up a little higher is because they got the first seed.
Yeah. That matters. I think that brings them closer to the top. But I think I think he's right in saying that Joker is actually the most valuable basketball player in the NBA.
Yeah, again, if we could finally get an answer on what the MVP is supposed to award, then we'd probably be even clearer to me. But, you know, listen, if SGA has a little bit more on the scoring side, then, you know, Jokic has everything more on the passing side, like, you know, beyond belief. Now, I know that SGA averages like six assists a game, but they're most of the time it's sort of the basic pass. And by the way, it's the basic pass because he draws so many defenders that he can just make the easy one pass away. The guy hits the shot. There's a reason why the OKC Thunder lead the league in wide open 3-point frequency, right? They take the most wide open threes. And that's because SGA is creating a lot of those on it with his gravity.
Also because it's low volume, right?
They're eliminating the defended ones.
That too, but also when you're not shooting a lot of them, maybe the closeouts aren't as hard. Maybe you don't have as much gravity.
Oh, well, I mean, to me, it's like the ones that would have been taken by other 3-point shooting teams that are not as open, they just shot fake and they pass or they drive, you know, okay. They just turn them down. I think that's sort of what I'm thinking.
Yeah. What I'm saying is like, if we're playing one-on-one and I just happen to not shoot a lot of jump shots, you're probably going to sag in eventually, right?
Oh, that too, because they're attacking all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, there's a lot of different versions of that for sure. But there's no question that the vast majority of their open threes are just off of passes from
I mean, Chet has opened up a lot for SGA too this season.
And that's certainly a pocket pass guy. So if you want to try and jam SGA on the pick and roll with him, you're going to be in trouble. And so
pocket pass, lob, or pick and pop.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe we'll get into the SGA conversation right now based on what I've seen. Are you aware that there is he's almost what's the word? He goes in one direction almost the entire time. Are you aware of it?
You told me that before, and I actually watched like a decent amount of highlights of SGA over the course of the year. The thing that I definitely want to hear more about that, but the thing that strikes me about him, he's like Kyrie in the sense that he doesn't have a lot of tendencies in terms of the moves he has. Like, he has a lot of different moves in the bag, crossovers behind the backs, step backs, different euros, same leg, slow down, speed up. You can't speed him up. And he just has a lot of options to go to. He kind of has step backs when he doesn't even need a step back. He got a lot of junk in his game, I shall say. But I didn't notice the left hand thing too much to go.
Yeah, it's almost all left hand, like exclusively left hand. And it's fascinating because, you know, when you think about when we talk about this all the time, a righty going to the left when they pull up, and he loves midi pull ups, right? He's so good at nailing that right foot down, inside foot, and then a little step back, like slam on the brakes and stop on a dime, and then a little bit of a step back and get some space. It makes it easier when you go to your left. Your right hip and your right elbow are aligned to the basket. So that all makes sense. All his pick and rolls. I mean, it was startling when you go through all of his makes in the pick and roll. How does he find success? It's almost every one of them is to the left. Even when they'll set screens that are flat, which I love, where you can choose which direction to go, he goes left. To the point where I was almost going to try and reach out and find out if he's a lefty, but he definitely doesn't feel like a lefty shooting righty to me anyway. But he goes to left so often, then he has that spin move where he'll turn back around and then get that shot off. So he's got it's kind of like he puts the hard hat on, punches to the clock, and then just plays his game, you know, consistently, ruthlessly, over and over.
You can hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. So I think you're saying
I don't hear you with your good mic.
Oh, really?
It switched mics on you.
Okay. Keep talking then. I'm going
to. Oh, okay. So anyway, so I guess to get back to the SGA point is ruthlessly efficient and just sticks to what he does well over and over again because you can't stop him. Yes, that's the mic that's working now.
Yep. Okay. Do you think part of the – so let me ask you this. When you were going through it, were you watching, like, in second spectrum, like, all his jump shots?
I called up all of his pick and roll scores because he does pick and roll the most.
Do you feel like part of that is that they rather have him take a tough two because all the right-hand stuff to the basket is almost impossible to guard and he shoots it at a really high level? So they take that away and they rather him shoot that left-handed pull-up because what I've seen in my head, sometimes he makes it look so easy just going to the right. It's almost like there's nobody there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, okay. So the pick and roll, if we want to, let's stick on that for 1 second. Obviously, you can choose which direction you want the ball handler to go because you'll turn the screen a certain way. So we have the flat ones where he can choose and he goes left almost every single time he does that. Okay. Then they have the ones where they set the ball to go to the right and he rejects it and he goes left anyway, right? So that happens a whole lot. Mm. Now, he probably does go right just enough to keep him a little bit honest. But you're right in the sense that, like, okay, if he goes right, he's going to probably get all the way to the basket for an easy
pickup.
So you kind of want him to. But I'm not seeing defenses
like he's just
taking away the three. I mean, he's that good where he'll hesitate like, across and go, and you can't stop him anyway.
Like, you know, as a basketball coach, like, you can't take away everything. So my thing is like, it could be that they're just taking away his best option.
Yeah.
And his second option is just so very great that.
Yeah.
Still, like maybe it's if they don't play that way, he gets 40 instead of 30 or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. Right. Because it's like, would you want to force him right on a pick and roll? Like, probably not. But you certainly. OK, that's the one thing I know for sure is you don't blast him when Chet screens for him. You have to just switch that or whatever. You cannot double team him or hang up too close to him with a Chet's man because he's going to hit Chet and it's over. Chet's too good at the short rolls. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's something you can't do. I'll mention that in the video. But, you're right. Like, what else can you do to try and do that? Now, the interesting thing about post-ups, which he doesn't do enough of, but he's terrific at, is, you know, most of them on the left block and he goes right shoulder every time. Everything's over the right shoulder and spins or fades. So that, and again, if you're on the left block and you want to take that away, you're inviting to the middle, which you usually don't want to do, right? But he's so quick and so thin. Is it thin the right word? It's slippery that, like, once he starts that spin, it's like you can't stay in front of him. So I mean, the bottom line is you're probably not going to be able to stop this guy no matter what you want to do.
Yeah,
I think there's some doubling you can do, but just not when he's gets the ball screen from Chet.
Double. I mean, they were like a 50-40-90 shooting team at some point. So that's like the tough thing when it comes to doubling him. How would you guard him? How would you guard that team? Like, what would be the best way to go?
Try and be a little bit more physical early, you know, up near the half court and like bumping him and keeping a body on him and trying to get his rhythm off. We don't see that enough. I think maybe players are worried about fouling these days. But, you know, in the playoffs, they'll let you get away with some of that.
I feel like you might just slip right by, right? If you try that and then be a
nuisance. You also need a bigger, I think you just need somebody bigger. You know, you need like a Kawhi or a PG on him.
Quick aside, I just want to ask you one thing. What would you say the benefits between hedge and recover and switching in general when it comes to defense?
The benefits of a hezzy and recover?
Yeah, like comparing those. Like just switching and then going like hedge and recover on pick and roll.
Well, I don't like hedging and recovering because a lot of times the hedging guy ends up screening his own man trying to run back to guard his own other guy. He gets in the way. So that's why switching tends to be the best way to do it. Now, the only problem is if they can target certain matchups and then you're in trouble. So but you can also pre-switch that where the guy they're trying to attack gets out of there before the pick and roll happens. So the switch when it does happen is with the guy you want. And again, I suspect that the answer is yes, give him as many of the mid-range pull-ups as he can take and get a hand up and hope he misses. And that's probably what you should do.
Yeah. Maybe that's
not let him pass a wide open 3-point shooter unless it's Giddy. And then, you know, take your chances.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he's getting that, because that's like the third option, right? I mean, that's the option they're trying to get him to, and he's still just so dangerous in that regard.
Right. Because we've seen the hedging thing, like, okay, like when Steph, they're trying to target Steph with LeBron, Steph will hedge really, really hard and push LeBron out. And then just enough where his man, LeBron's original man, can get around and get in position.
Yeah. And Steph sprints back.
Yeah. So we've seen that happen. That's it's still viable to some degree when they're trying to do that. And it's worked. Like, it's kind of caused them to hunt him less. So that's okay. But I, for the most part, whenever I've seen a lot of those hedging, I feel like you're pulling that other defender so far out of position. It makes me really, really nervous. You could probably, by the way, could you blast him when Chet screens and early rotate over to steal that pocket pass? Maybe. Or be right on top of Chet when he catches it, so he's not exactly going downhill. It doesn't really matter. The guy's going to be a foot taller than whoever rotates over to him. But maybe there's something in there where you can sneak in there and steal a pass or two and maybe, cause him to think twice about trying to force a pocket pass to Chet. So there's something there as well, but it's going to be a real problem trying to stop them. And I think that the issue would probably be is right. If you want to increase their 3-point attempts because you want to keep them out of lane or whatever, well, they are the second, or they were tied as the first best, shooting team in the league and from three. So I don't think that's going to work on you either.
Yeah. I think like turning, yeah, you're right. It's just so tough. I guess turning SGA into a playmaker, probably, and just like let his teammates beat you is probably the best way to go. But then everybody's shooting it so well. So,
yeah. Well, and you got guys like Jalen Williams, who's just a beast. And you got Chet, who's a beast. It's like
I guess you're trying to get Josh Giddey to take threes, I guess.
Yeah. And by the way, I kind of want to say I saw him hit a few and I almost want to say that he shot okay from those. Let me check. But the reason why he did, Giddey shot 30, almost 34%, which is pretty good for him. And it's good enough, but he literally could lick his thumb, check the wind before he shoots it. He's that wide open. And if you just added a little bit of pressure, he doesn't shoot 34%. It goes down to, sub 30 easy.
Also, what he has over some of the other like teams in the West that you could call legit title contenders is the OKC Thunder don't have to flip a switch. Like, they've been playing this way the whole year. So I feel like they could just continue on without having any issues, while some of the other teams, like the Clippers, have been up and down. The Lakers have been up and down. And even Minnesota has been a little bit up and down, even though they tied for first. Like, this team has been super consistent. And I know like SGA had a viral clip talking about his consistency, but I think that matters. Like, we talk about the basketball gods. If you've been just playing the right way over the course of time, I think that's such a benefit.
Right. And we get to find out about Daigneault and how good a coach is he really, and adjustments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've already expressed my deep concerns about Minnesota, and I worry that that's going to be the little bit of, there's a play here, play there, they decide series. And if that's the case, I'm worried about that. We'll find out from OKC. Everything that we've seen so far in my indication and what I'm watching makes me feel okay about it. But, I would think that they'd have the edge if it's a matchup between those two teams. But that's going to be important. And we want to find out whether he's ready for this too. And, he probably is. The Drew Show is back. He's got another super chat. Thank you so much, Drew. I feel bad that I didn't mention Brunson. Tibbs has turned the Knicks into a defensive juggernaut and Celtics killer. Brunson is a two-way player. OG. Two-way player. Interesting. All right. So Brunson's not getting his props for defense, according to the Drew Show.
I think he's passable.
Yeah, he's tough.
He plays hard. And he's strong. I think you need that as a smaller guard, right? Like, you need some strength.
Right.
And, now, he's sturdy. Sturdy is the right word. Sturdy.
Sturdy. Stout. Now, if we'll find out in the playoffs if they're going to target him. I would try. I would certainly try and see what would happen because he is short. I mean, if he's 6 feet, he's in shoes. He's 6 feet. So you might be able to find some opportunities with a good 6'8", 6'7" wing to attack him. But we'll see. And then, I think Tibbs will have him completely ready for that. OG is just a one-man destructor.
His winning percentage is crazy. Somebody looked that up in the comments section. OG's winning percentage with the Knicks, it's probably easily over 900.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question what he's brought. And by the way, can I whisper, like, maybe they're better without Randall?
Shouts to my guy, Pierre, Numbers on the Board podcast. He was on my show and he was saying that, like, he'd rather it this way with Julius not playing. Because if Julius were to come back, it wouldn't even be the best version of Julius. And he's not like a guy you could drop in there. So, he thinks they're better without him for right now. And I would agree. And I agree with you as well.
I mean, I'll acknowledge that even when Julius was there and OG was there, I think that was for like a couple games, whatever that was. I saw some footage and I was like, okay, this is working. But, then you got interesting lineups where you got, you know, I don't know if you have the spacing it well enough for Brunson, but if you can put OG in that power forward spot and with Hartenstein, then you can kind of space the floor a little bit better with still have defenders. So I think that there might be some version where this is the better team overall, and you don't necessarily have to deal with, like, you know, there is a what's the word I'm looking for with Randall? You know, you got to keep him happy, right? There's an emotional aspect to that as well with him that that might be taxing, you know, on the rest of the team. They can do it. They can handle it. They're all tough guys. But I wonder if it just is more harmonious with him not on the floor. And we'll find out. We'll find out pretty quick.
Most definitely. Totally agree.
All right. Are there any more Super Chats before we start to wrap this up? So anything else we've got to talk about before we hang it up?
No, I think that's about it.
Is everyone going to watch the video I'm doing right now on
watch that video.
You know,
now. Yo, the YouTube. Hey, so I've been doing more YouTube stuff lately, Coach Nick, and I have to say, like, I don't understand YouTube.
What's
in terms of, like, what videos go and what videos don't. I'll tell you something interesting, Coach Nick, and I don't know how much this helps you, but I think now on YouTube, it doesn't matter as much as it used to how many subscribers you have.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, like, look, I'll give you, I mean, you could tell, you could do this on whatever that thing is that you can, people can see my subscriber numbers. I used to get, like, I don't know, 3,000 a day and for years and years and years. And all of a sudden around COVID, it just completely stopped. I still got the same amount of views, or the views kept going up, and I'm like, okay, that's all I really care about are the views. And then you'll see these some channels that will get huge amounts of views with 100,000 subscribers, you know, or 200,000.
What I'm saying is you could even have a channel with a lot less subscribers than that, and a video hits some kind of algorithm, and you don't know why.
Well, you know, and it goes crazy. That is absolutely true. Yeah. So you can hit a video every now and then randomly without having a lot of subscribers. Yes. Now, but the flip side is you have a lot of subscribers and not always hit huge numbers. That's what's interesting there. And I would love to figure out exactly what that is about. Like, I would never have a negative net, you know, day for subs. And now that happens somewhat often. The only thing I can think of is it's possible that because I've been around for so long and I'm so old, that they might deactivate accounts that are old. And I probably have like thousands of old accounts that are not active anymore. So they might just be slowly just removing them. And then on certain days, it could be 50 or 60 of those guys. You know what I mean? I don't know else. And it's by virtue of me being around for 14 years. So that, you know, and I can't control that. So I have to imagine that might be part of it. But I've kind of gotten over this. What does Mubsy say? He goes, I have 14,000 subs and get 30,000 plus views and even 100,000 views. I don't know why. I mean, listen, we know why. If you look at, you know, the videos that gets 100,000 views, it's probably a really great thumbnail. It's probably some sort of a bombastic, you know, title that's hot take in there, right? Yeah. That's probably, you know, those are the biggest things generally.
Also the first couple seconds have to catch, because a lot of times people don't even see this thumbnail when it comes to discoverability. Right. It's kind of like that algorithm of the next up.
But the thumbnail is there, isn't it?
No. You could actually find a video without ever seeing the thumbnail.
You'll have to show me that, because I'm unaware of that. Even when the recommended side, it feel like the thumbnail is there. And no,
I think sometimes the video just starts.
Oh, OK. Well, that's interesting, too. Right. The autoplay on the end.
So almost like the thumbnail obviously could drag you in. But sometimes people don't see the thumbnail. So the first part of the video has to be really catching as well.
Right. Well, hey, let's shout out to Seahorn. If you can remember me doing the video of Jordan hitting the shot over Elo. Yeah, that was probably 14 years ago. I can probably look it up. I don't even know. I used to do a lot of Jordan videos back in the day. I might have to do another one, by the way. This slander of Michael Jordan in the name of putting LeBron in a higher pedestal is really disgusting. I also think that, like, I did a tweet where I was like, oh, I don't know if you saw this. Jokic, they lob him the ball into the post. And as the ball is in the air on its way to him, he checks, like, to scan. I had said he's looking for a teammate, but he's probably looking for the defense, whatever. He scans quickly and then catches the ball, right? That's like, nobody does that, right?
Right.
Tell me a player that you know. Did you ever do that when the ball was in the air on its way to you as a pass? Would you take your eyes off it to scan and then try and find it again? No.
I think I might have a video.
Watch that ball in your hand.
I think I might have a video of me doing that.
Really? All right, you have to prove it, because most players will not do that. And certainly it would be remarkable to see. Like, it can't happen all the time. You know, the ball's coming to you. You got to look at it. You got to catch it. Right? That's the most important thing. To, like, take your eyes off it and then to come back again is, you know, to check the floor is remarkable. But, like, I think a lot of people that were yelling at me about that, they were either Giannis fans or Luka fans. It was kind of weird. And it seemed like it was like, you can't praise somebody else because that means that you're S-H-I-T-T-I-N-G-ing on my favorite player, which is like, why does Luka have to come up in the conversation? And Giannis either. It was really, you know, I don't know if it's sad is the right word, but it was like, it made me feel for these people who are kind of gripping the phone too tight.
Yeah, I guess people want to feel like they're part of, you know, a tribe. And it's kind of like when you become a fan of something. You know, I feel like when we look at evolutionary psychology, some of our survival comes from, oh, that's the enemy, because you have to focus on that or you'll die. And I feel like it's still embedded today in social media.
Interesting. And then that's true. I mean, I listen, does it make sense to me that, like, a praise for one player is like an affront to my favorite player? Like, I'm not unaware of this mindset. I just don't, I'm not in that. I could never have that. I would love to be able to praise anybody who I see who does something really great.
Well, we know that it's like that with LeBron and Jordan. Like, that's a fact.
Yeah. And we know who's better, right?
Yeah, LeBron.
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right. Well, we have two things to disagree on today, then, that series and then this one. So, and anyhow.
It makes for better TV if we have a disagreement.
No, listen, LeBron is like 1B, I guess. It's like there's no real way to put anybody, either of them, over each other. They're that good.
You know what? It'd be a good video for the offseason. Just go through them and, you know, kind of give. I know you think Jordan's better, but like an unbiased take on who's better. First of all, those videos, I could tell you on social media, because I do LeBron Jordan clips, they always do well.
I think I've done it at least once, if not twice. But maybe I'll revisit it again, because obviously if I have done it, it's been a few years. There's a lot more data now on LeBron. And it's not like LeBron has just strung out his career to like add some more stats. You know, his stats are still better than anybody's stats ever at that age. And anybody's at even for 5 years younger than him, it's better than those guys. So, like, there are players, right, that have strung out the string, maybe snuck a champion as like a role player and then like gotten a lot of props for all of that.
Gary Payton.
I'm talking about. But that's not LeBron. And so that has to be factored into it, right? Like, he just was much more of a physical specimen, even though Michael Jordan was as much a physical specimen as anybody could ever imagine. But you know, LeBron's done it for longer. Now, the only question there is, if we're talking about who's better, does that matter, right? Should we only compare them at their peaks? Right? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a fair case that Jordan had the better peak.
Right. I mean, I probably would say that as well. I will. I've been on the record as saying that. That's true.
I think Larry Bird's peak is underrated, too. I think he's like top Larry Bird. I think he's top three when it comes to peaks.
Yeah. Now, so the question is, how long was that peak? Does that have to be a big factor? Now, if you only played like 6 years in the league and you had like, you know, a great couple of years and then that was it, I get it. We can't really include them then. You know, there needs to be some version of longevity. Certainly, Michael Jordan covers that. Larry Bird, you know, it's really too bad that he did have the injuries he did, because I feel like his peak was probably, what, 2.5 years, 3 years tops.
I mean, he won 3 MVPs in a row, so I guess you have to say that's a 3-year peak. Like three,
but then it was pretty quick where he got banged up a lot around that, and that's too bad. But, you know, his peak was probably like maybe like 5 seasons. So that's long enough too, right? That's enough to have a 5-season peak and then 4 or 5 seasons on either end of that.
Yeah, I think it's enough. But then some people, when you look at LeBron's peak, like, it kind of blows others out the water, you know?
Right, because it's that much longer.
Yeah.
And then we have to discuss. Well, we're not going to discuss this on the pod, but there, you know, there could be reasons for the longevity. Nonetheless, anyway, we're going
to
move on.
Yeah, but we don't. But we don't know. Yeah, but I know what you're speaking to. We don't have to talk about it. But I'm sure there's others who've done the same. So.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And then it's not. And then also, you're innocent until proven guilty on the same front as well.
But and by the way, I'm not even sure I'm on the. I maybe that stuff shouldn't even be illegal anyway. Like, I think maybe
I think I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, if I have dad allergies, I'll have a shot, and you know, so it's like, you know. But that said, you know, it could be extremely detrimental to your health at the end of your life, and make your life a lot shorter.
Coffee and creatine is performance enhancing. Should those be illegal?
Yeah, no, definitely not. No, they should not. Yeah. But, you know, look at someone like Walter Payton. He died at like 50. Like, that's just sad. Or some of those other guys.
And, we aren't exactly sure if that's the reason.
We're right. We aren't really sure. Yeah. It's hard to imagine. And listen, there was no bigger Walter Payton fan than me growing up in Chicago. And like, I had posters. I mean, he was God to us.
I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger is still alive and well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he did a lot. Yeah. You're right. So it's a lot of different things and we'll never know and all those things. But so, I mean, I think that isn't that the reason why I don't want to get into it anyway. But we'll talk about in the offseason, we'll do some more maybe LeBron versus Michael stuff. Maybe we'll bring some clips and discuss them at that point. Yeah. Bring some numbers and be prepared. But anyway, I got to get back to this SGA video. God darn it.
Well, let's get it, Cole. I'm excited for that one. I mean, he's definitely like, you know, the up and coming players, the new guys who are in the MVP mix. Those are always fun guys to talk about. So,
yeah. And I really wanted to do an OKC video, but like, I got to keep it focused. And I really hadn't done one all year. Like, that's the most criminal thing of all time is I'm so late on getting to OKC. I've started a couple earlier and then got pulled away or whatever. So I apologize. And hopefully everyone's going to come and watch because SGA, you know, the things I'm noticing in his game, like we talked about, going always going left. I'm not sure. I think I talked about on the local broadcast, but it's like there's some stuff here. It's like, whoa, this is, you know, not that it's even a scouting report because, again, he's too good. But there are some tendencies here that were like blew me away or like, whoa, I can't believe how often he does it and how good it works for him. There's some insights there.
Yeah. Who would have saw that he'd be this good? I think people thought he'd be an all-star, but to be in the MVP conversation is
Yeah, I wish I could have said it when he was the Clippers, but, you know, we could, you know, pretty quickly you knew something. And it's amazing that, like, you know, the trade happened and he found that the home and they went through a bunch of losing to get some of those picks. And, man, they've hit those picks. Chet, Jalen Williamses. Who else am I thinking? Even Giddey. Giddey, I could help Giddey. There's people out there that could help Giddey easily. And it's too bad because he's such a good field passer that
he's just a good basketball player.
Yeah. And I think he could be more valuable to them, but he's sort of like, you know, sort of gotten his stuck there and he's probably going
to, is that where we got into though, that you need all five guys to be over 40% to win the championship these days?
Well, right? No, but like, I think what ends up happening is because of the shooting stuff and he gets left alone and then
Chet is a spacer himself. So like, I mean, if one guy's not a spacer, I don't know if that like makes you out of contention or something because you got one guy who doesn't shoot it well, right?
No, it definitely doesn't make it out of contention without, yeah. I mean, it listen, out of contention for the title.
That's what I'm saying. Tough.
When you have a guy who they really sag off of, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, you can't take away everything. So you're going to have to sag off somebody no matter what. Right.
Yeah. But I'm talking about like the Russ sag off or the Draymond or the,
oh man, that's crazy.
But you know, it actually becomes a mental thing, right? You know, it's like they get it to him, he catches it, and he's like nobody within, you know, 10 feet of him, and then he's like, you know, but that's why coaching exists, because we figure out how to limit those and make him still attack. Anyhow, but I lament that I didn't get an OKC video out earlier, but at least I'll get one on SGA before the playoffs start, and then I'll certainly break down as many games as I can of theirs. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, no, sounds great, Coach. A great, great episode.
As always, a really good episode. Great stuff. Thank you, everybody out there, for the super chats and for the great conversation and just being here, all these people here. It's always great to see everybody. We'll be back again. Like maybe in the playoffs, maybe we'll sneak another extra one in here every now and then.
Sounds good, man. Especially if something crazy happens, right?
Yeah. Probably. So get those notifications turned on. If you're over on Twitter, come over to YouTube and watch it. You can do some super chats.
Like this video. I think that helps the algorithms. Like this video. Sure.
Like the video. Watch it again when it's not live anymore. And we'll go from there. But thank you so much for everybody. Thank you, Combo, as always, for being here. And don't forget, sports fans and B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Combo?
I'm in.